Welcome, everyone, to a special episode of the Women in ERP podcast. And we're thrilled to have with us the accomplished Stephanie Paul, now the Managing Director at IFS. Congratulations, Steph. As we embark on this episode, it comes with a mix of emotions, as it marks the culmination of a two-year journey that Stephanie and I shared, bringing to life and nurturing the Women in ERP podcast. Yet it stands as a testament to the very purpose that inspired us to initiate this venture, supporting the retention and progression of women in the ERP field, a mission that's seen fulfillment in Stephanie's own career trajectory. This episode signifies the conclusion of an era, but more importantly, it heralds the dawn of a new chapter for the Women in ERP podcast. Stephanie gracefully hands over the reins to our new co-host, Emma Chambers. Many of you may recall Emma from our live episode last year in celebration of International Women's Day. Emma is a passionate advocate for women in the workplace, actively co-chairing the Women in SAP group. Her tireless efforts champion the development and advancement of women across the SAP user and partner community, aligning seamlessly with the mission of Women in ERP. It was an unequivocal decision when I approached Emma to join me on this journey. I'm excited about the fresh perspectives and insights she will bring to the podcast, continuing our commitment to gender equality and empowerment in the ERP space.
Thank you, Abby. I'm absolutely thrilled to be coming on board with Women in ERP. As you know, I'm a massive fan of the podcast. I think it's an incredible platform that you've created and some really essential and vital conversations. And, you know, I would love to be in a world where we didn't need the podcast and we didn't need the Women in SAP group. But we know that we've still got a lot of work to do. We know that we have a lot of work to achieve representation and parity for women, especially in the tech sector. So I think the two work together really seamlessly. I also think it's a really exciting time to be in ERP, and so I'm really looking forward to what the conversations are that we'll be having in the coming year.
It gives me enormous pleasure to welcome Stephanie Paul to the Women in ERP podcast, this time as the interviewee. Hi, Steph.
Hey, Abby. This is different.
I know, you're on the other side this time. Lots has changed in the past 6 months.
At least 6 months, yeah. It's been busy.
Yeah, you're now the MD of IFS,
which UK, is yeah.
Crazy. Where did that come from?
Well, where did it come from? I guess it's been something I've been working towards for a long time. The expression blood, sweat and tears kind of springs to mind. But yeah, no, really excited, taking on a whole new challenge as of the 1st of Jan. So yeah, really looking forward to it.
It's really exciting. Let's go back then to the very beginning of your career. And can you share with our listeners your journey in the ERP industry and what led you to your current role?
I think it's fair to say it's been unconventional. I don't think I even knew the three letters ERP when I was at school, let alone as a young adult.
You did.
So, yeah, exactly. I went through a very tough period of my life, it was about 8-9 years ago. And that was personally, professionally, emotionally. And I really took a step back and decided, what did I actually want from life? And how was I going to get there? In terms of kind of industries, I'd been made redundant. That was one of the aspects of the many things that was going on. I kind of thought, what industries are pretty solid right now? Because it had been the third time I've made redundant for various reasons.
Wow.
I mean, it kind of shapes who you are, yeah. Like I think for the positive. But it really made me go, right, what kind of industry do I want to be in? And I kind of narrowed it down to software or pharmaceuticals, pretty very different ones. And it just so happened that IFS at the time actually was local to where I was in High Wycombe. Like I said, a lot had changed in my life. And I kind of took a conscious decision of I kind of accepted I was going to go backwards to go forwards, but I felt much more confident in an industry that I knew was rapidly growing and kind of I was safer. So long story short, that's how I ended up there. And yeah, not look back. It's been quite the journey.
Yeah, it has. What was your previous career then before you ended up in ERP?
I've done all sorts of random things since I left uni. I did economics at university, weirdly.
Wow.
Well, not weirdly. It just kind of, yeah, that's how it started. So I worked in the city for a bit. So right in London, doing bits and bobs for startups. So a lot of it was kind of more on the supply chain, working with retailers, wholesalers. I had a period where I was working directly with suppliers to people like Marks and Spencers, Debenhams, and I'd go out to China and did all sorts of really random things. But actually, looking back now, that's put me in really good stead for where I am because I work with thousands of kind of manufacturers. So it's given me a really good kind of insight into that. And I did, I guess the job I had directly before IFS was more kind of grey market stocks. So selling surplus stock from, I don't know, the likes of Carphone Warehouse to like eBay sellers and Amazon Power sellers. It's quite a big market. So it was very different, but it was more e-commerce based rather than software.
Yeah.
So yeah, quite
a jump. Yeah. Certainly. No, it's good. Going back to us then and the Women in ERP podcast, how do you feel that experience of us creating this and understanding a lot more about women that work in this sector, mm-hmm. how do you think that's
or lack of women
all?
That work yeah. in the sector?
How has that influenced you or shaped your perspective?
It's interesting. I'm one of four girls, so I've got three sisters, and I've grown up in a house where it didn't matter if you were a girl or boy. We were all encouraged to do our best. Like I've mentioned to you before, one of my sisters played rugby for England. So there was never any kind of, you can't do this. So I never really felt it growing up. It was only as I got older and more so specifically moving into tech, because like bearing in mind I come from like retail wholesale, and certainly retailers is actually completely opposite. It's very female heavy.
Yeah.
Did I start to notice it? And it's not so much I notice it directly within my own company, within IFS. I notice it when I'm talking to boards of customers and partners and stuff like that, where it's not a very diverse bunch. And I think it also varies by functional area, you know, but if I look generally within finance, HR is still quite female heavy. If I look within my sales organization, you're kind of looking at 25% women rather than 50-50, which is very different to the rest of the business. And it's not because we don't want to, it's because people don't apply for it.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to kind of find the unicorns, as I call them.
Yeah. I mean, is that been your experience? Because, Emma, you've obviously worked at customer sites.
Yes, definitely. I think, as you say, HR tends to be quite female-led. Engineering, on the mm-hmm. other hand, is the complete opposite. So, yeah, working in an engineering industry for quite a while, you do notice the lack of women and the lack of women leaders. And, yeah. you know, we know that that's a really big issue for getting other women to join the industry, or join the tech sector. Mm-hmm. They need to be able to see that there's a place for them and see that there's a path for them. And so, you know, that's why it's great seeing role models like Steph now yeah. taking on more leadership roles.
And I have to say, it's something that I've become more conscious of as I've gone through my career in terms of being more, like you say, that role model. Like, when I was younger, I just didn't really think about it. I didn't think I was setting an example, but now I've had people come up to me and be like, oh, you know, it's inspiring. And I'm like, how am I inspiring? But actually, you kind of, yeah. but I've kind of taken on this new sense of responsibility, particularly in the last kind of couple of months, where I've had some really lovely comments. And actually, it's made me reflect on it a lot more than perhaps I would before. And like I say, it's a sense of responsibility, because I think it's about passing on to the next generation. You know, I do it with my nieces where, you know, they'll say something to me about, oh, you're on holiday or you do this. And I'm like, that's a work hard and you've got to, yeah. this is how you do it. And,
that's
you know, you shouldn't just be, there's no Prince Charming coming to save you. Sorry to break it to you at a young age. But it's one of the things I'm excited about, put it that way.
What does that mean for you then? What are your new responsibilities and what does being an MD entail?
I think for me, I mean, I've been part of the UK team at IFS for the last nearly 8 years. So I'd like to think I have a really good understanding and grounding of the business. For me, it's about taking things to the next level. So it's kind of the growth, really kind of, I guess, leveling up in some ways and really, like I say, inspiring others. But also, you know, how do we be the best versions of ourselves and actually kind of think bigger and be more aspirational and tackle things head on.
Yeah.
Really challenge and disrupt the market, really, which is what, you know, we've had a fantastic few years. But again, it's how do we drive more change and faster? Because, you know, we like to think we've got a great product. I think we've got a really great team. The energy I'm feeling just from, there's quite a few of us that have kind of moved in the last few months in terms of, you know, promoted. It just feels like there's a whole new lease of life. And like I said, I'm just excited to get stuck in and really see what we can do.
Yeah.
I think it's important to have that kind of next generation almost of ideas and people, you know, wanting to take the bull by the horns and just get stuck in.
So what goals do you have for the company then in the coming years?
I mean, we've obviously got the standard kind of KPIs, but for me, it's about having a really good culture. I want a team of people that are proud and love working for the company,
yeah.
that want to be there, that will go above and beyond because they love it. And I think if you've got that within, and it's hard to build that, but it's really important to do it. So for me, that's one of the main goals, is to have, you know, a really engaged and energized team.
How do you do that then? Because you've always felt that way, I think.
Yeah.
How do you then instill that in other people?
I think it's empowering people.
Yeah.
It's empowering them to be the best version of themselves and trusting them. I'm a Virgo, right? So I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I like to control things, and it's just who I am.
Oh, I'm married.
I'm trying to kind of be, I guess, it's that authenticity, right? It's giving people the space to be who they are, and then naturally kind of put more into it. I don't know how you build it.
I think that trust factor is a big factor, isn't it? I think when you do trust people to do what you've employed them to do.
Yeah.
It makes them want to give back, and, you know.
Totally. And I think half of that is recruiting the right people, right? So I feel like I've got a really strong team around me. And I had an offsite a couple of weeks ago, and just the ideas that were bouncing around, because everyone was just excited, because I'm in the driving seat now, and actually I can make stuff happen. And it's not to say that we couldn't before. It's just different when you can give people the reins and say, look, what would you do? What do you want to do? I don't know your functional area really well. You tell me, what does good look like?
Yeah.
And then you can agree or disagree, but at least you're having the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think just getting people together, like, I don't know about you, but getting back into the office as well has made a big difference.
Yes, massively.
And it's not an everyday thing, but it's that culture, it's that team spirit.
I think with a new team, that must be especially important, like getting together and bouncing ideas off each other, which is hard to do when you're all remote, right, and sat at home.
Yeah, it's funny. So I did an all hands on Friday, which I say it's an all hands. I've said we're not doing another all hands, so I haven't called it that. I've called it Feel Good Friday.
Oh, nice.
And like, it's more about, rather than just giving information to people, like blah, 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 I want to create more of a community. And I've said to them, I want to hear what's actually happening. I want to know what's happening in that project. What's a day in the life of, I don't know, a CSM, or a day in the life of a consultant on a project? So we're kind of trying to do a bit much more inclusive.
That's a good idea.
And I ended the call with, you know, we're going into the weekend, it's Feel Good Friday, in 3 emojis, put it in the chat of how you're feeling. I just thought, it's just, again, just trying to do things differently.
Yeah. And how are people finding that? Are they engaged with it?
Yeah. That's what I mean. That's what I'm kind of saying about the energy and kind of trying to create something a bit different.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I'm excited.
So from a business standpoint then, what are the plans for IFS for the next 12 to 18 months?
I mean, how long's a piece of string? I think for IFS, and I think actually for the industry as a whole, we're at a pivotal time in terms of AI. So very much we've got a big focus on that. I think for us, if I specifically, whether I look at the ERP side, the EAM, so the assets or the field service, I think it's integral amongst all of it. And it's breaking down that software and functional silos into one place and having data at people's fingertips. But not only having the data, it's how that data is used and kind of connecting is probably the better word. And I think there's going to be great value that certainly IFS are going to see, but also our customers. So it very much kind of focused on delivering that value to customers. And I think AI is going to play an absolutely integral role in that. So for us, it is embedded in the product. It has been embedded in the product for years. If I think about our scheduling software.
Right, yes.
And if I look at the roadmap for the future, I mean, we're aggressively looking at AI. We've got a chief AI officer now.
Yeah.
You know, we've got the next release later this year, and actually we've got 2 this year coming. And there's just so much functionality in terms of AI coming in, and it's what our customers are asking us for.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of the biggest focus more than anything at the minute. And obviously with that, as a business ourselves, the growth is massively important for us. So it kind of goes hand in hand, to be honest.
Yeah, it does. So getting that data right, ensuring that's correct in order to fuel the AI machine, I guess.
Do you think customers are ready for it?
Well, that's the thing, right? AI is an opportunity and a challenge. Let's be honest. So it's about connecting the data, and AI is not the functionality. It's the data, right?
Yeah.
It's interesting. So I've recently, in the last month or so, got a Copilot license at Microsoft, and I've always been. I mean, I use ChatGPT.
Yeah.
It's open every day on my laptop now.
Who doesn't?
Well, you'd be surprised. Someone said to me, you know, we're not competing against a chatbot or AI or whatever it may be, you're competing against someone else that's using it. So I did a whole thing with our sales team a few weeks ago, which was enabling them on how to use AI to their advantage, right? Because all our competitors are going to be doing it.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating what you can get. You know, things like, you know, looking at an annual report, it can summarize it all. It's
amazing.
Yeah. So with this Copilot, I was a little bit skeptical going in, But oh my God, has it changed my life?
I've not used it yet.
It's, I think, approximately like $30 a month, but it's like having your own intern built into your computer.
I need this.
Are these some of the things that you find most sort of appealing about AI coming, the ability to sort of speed up your analytics or not have to rely on somebody else?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. So like one of the functional bits is, you know, like you have a couple of hours away from your computer and you've got like an email chain that's like 20 deep or something to summarize it all for you. So you don't have to go and read it all. Like it just gives you a quick summary or jazzing up your PowerPoint slides. And I think the more people start using stuff like that, the more they're going to be less skeptical. But I do, let's be honest, there's a challenge, right? You can't have, I think everyone needs to be mindful that whatever you put in,
you're going
to
get out.
Anyone can have access to.
Is it going
to
be a point where all our PowerPoints look exactly the same?
Well, so we've got something behind a firewall. So everything that goes in, it's using Bing, that if you use ChatGPT in there, it's only within...
Within your organisation.
Organisation. And I think, but not everyone knows that. I mean, we've got an AI policy, but I suspect quite a few companies don't.
Not yet. No. Think they're coming in.
Yeah. I think it's going to be the next big movement, isn't it? AI policy, AI ethics as well.
Yes. Yeah. That's going to be an interesting one. Yeah. It's going to be, well, where does it end, right?
Well, there's a natural inequality in AI, isn't there?
This is very true. But yeah, it's across, someone said to me the other day, where everyone's been putting stuff into like ChatGPT, if you ask it a question on a Friday, it gives you like a half-assed answer because it's been taught. It's been taught that you're a bit lazier on a Friday.
No.
Yeah. It's honestly, it's fascinating.
That's brilliant.
So to your point around inequality, it's not a search engine. It just pulls information. Mm-hmm. So whatever's out there
and
is what,
learns.
And that's
it learns by
key.
Whoever's using it. So then you've got to look at who's using it. So we talk about like the data having a bias in it, but also if it's predominantly a particular type of persona that's using it, and we know that it's less likely to be women, for example, then it's learning bias as it goes as well.
And I think there's just so much that hasn't been, we're moving at such a pace. You know, there was the AI summit middle of last year, end of last year, something like that. Yeah, I think governments, like we're just moving so fast.
It's moving much faster than we can put safeguards in place.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a new frontier really, isn't it, for a lot of groups, I think.
Absolutely. I think there's going to be a few that learn the hard way, as anything. But if you don't keep up, you're going to get left behind.
Absolutely.
And, you know, back to what's the focus, I mean, definitely that is a major focus for us.
Yeah, I think it has to be, definitely. Yeah.
For us, it's wrapping it around all the existing functionality and products. It's not just our main IFS Cloud products, it's all the acquisitions as well. So it's how do we connect all those elements of the business unilaterally so that it kind of, like I say, it's all encompassing and it's not about introducing AI somewhere into the product. It's enabling, you know, a company to use it across their whole business, which is why it's so fundamental. We can't just plop it into one bit of the software. It needs to be embedded throughout.
Yeah, but then you think like how organizations use so many different platforms, different bits of software. How do you put AI across the whole piece?
Because it's connecting the data, right?
Yeah.
It's at the heart of AI is data, whether it's people, productivity, assets, service, it's connecting it all.
So it's connecting all your systems up. And are there, you know, is IFS an open AI? Can you connect everything to it?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So we've got that architecture that allows for it with the REST APIs and very open architecture.
Yeah, it's exciting. Interested to see where it goes.
Definitely. I know, aren't we all?
So it's been a real pleasure co-hosting the Women in ERP podcast with you. How do you feel about passing the co-host reins to Emma? And what advice do you have for her as she takes on this role?
I mean, it's a piece of my heart is going. But no, I'm really excited for Emma. I think you're going to do a fantastic job. You know, I've kind of given it up reluctantly, but
sure.
I just know, I think it's the right thing for both of us in terms of just having the bandwidth. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit strapped for time these days. And I want it to do it justice. It feels like the right time to kind of hand over the reins to Emma. And like I say, I know you're going to do a fantastic job. And, you know, I'm always going to be your number one fan. Don't forget that.
Yeah, you'll always be an
Any
ambassador.
Swag or whatever. Send my way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely, it's bittersweet, right? It's exciting. I know I've got a lot of great stuff ahead. And, you know, I feel like we've come a long way, Abby.
We have.
You really have.
And it's really nice to have made something that we were just kind of having a go at.
Yeah.
And now people, like, love it.
You really have created something really, really incredible, I think. And so how would you like to see it evolve and into the next chapter? Because, you know, obviously there's potentially more that we can do, more that we can cover? What would you like to see from the...
I think it fascinates me, who listens to it, by the way. But, you know, I'll be at an event or something and someone will come up to me, or even like I'd be in a meeting and someone would say to me at the end, oh, I heard your podcast. And I think, you know, someone that you would not expect, generally a man, and not, that's not like it, but just... Yeah, it really does fascinate me. And I think, so for me, it's about increasing the kind of visibility and the kind of number of listeners, I guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know what the plans are, but maybe like in-person event, like networking, meeting up with people. I think that would be great next step.
I agree. I think it'd be lovely to do some sort of connector events.
Yeah, we've spoken about that recently. Yeah,
definitely. Like I say, number one fan. Yeah. I'll
be
there.
On the guest list, don't
As you step into this new role, what challenges do you foresee in the ERP industry and how do you plan to address them?
Other than kind of going back to the AI, I think that's the biggest challenge. Like we've just said, like the inequality within that and how do you keep up in a safe way?
Yeah.
For me, that's the biggest thing facing everyone. It's what all our customers are talking about. You know, it's interesting just getting people together to talk about it because everyone's got the same challenges, you know, whether they're on outdated legacy versions that, you know, are creaking or on the latest and greatest, it's still, yeah, the same problems within their business, particularly with AI. So what do I see as the biggest challenges within ERP specifically? I think it's keeping up and keeping that data safe.
The security.
Yeah. Security will That's be a big thing. Yeah.
Do you think there's also a big challenge from the skills gap, which potentially is more pronounced in ERP?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we're definitely seeing that. And I know it's an industry problem, right? It's not just IFS, just to clarify. Yeah. It is across the board.
It's huge in SAP.
It is huge, because with the impending deadline as well for S4, it's kind of exacerbating that issue. And of course, women then have a huge part to play, though, where there's a huge wealth of talent that's pretty much untapped or undertapped that could be filling that skills gap. So, you know, I think it's really important that we look at how women can help step into that space.
And how we accelerate that, right? Yeah. Because it's identifying who those people are and then bringing them on board, but quickly, because we all know you're not going to get skilled up, you know, in I don't know, finance within an ERP system within a couple of days. It's going to take months, if not years, to really understand it. So this is a long-term problem that we've all got, whichever kind of badge we're wearing.
Is it about how we're recruiting? Like, how does IFS recruit? Where can people find positions at IFS? Is it LinkedIn? Do you use recruiters?
Both. Networks. It doesn't really matter which functional area. I mean, it'll always be on, like, the website. We've got our own recruiters. We use external recruiters. LinkedIn. Again, it kind of goes back to that community, right? If you've got that culture of people that are happy working there, they tend to refer their friends.
Yeah.
And you kind of create a little bit of FOMO as well, which also helps, you know. People want to work for a fun company.
And you get to retain them because that's a big issue, not just recruiting people, but retaining them, and particularly women, because they do tend to leave at a higher rate than men.
Ever at the moment. Yeah.
There was some statistic I was reading on the train on the way up today that 2023 was a record year for female CEOs leaving.
Yes.
So I wonder really why that sad. Is, whether it's, is it, the stress, is it balancing life?
It's the broken rung phenomenon that we talk about. There isn't necessarily the pathway to get women from graduate entry or junior levels to senior management levels.
It all depends on the company, right, as well. You know, I've worked in companies where it's been a proper old boys network and you just did what you were told and kind of, and then equally, if I look at my own career in at IFS and, you know, when Darren came in, it completely changed everything. For the positive in my case. So if you're ambitious and you want to do more, there's totally opportunities for you. Just create them for yourself.
And as you get more senior and if you're at that C level, then you probably want to thrive, not just survive, don't you? And so you've got more opportunities.
Totally. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier, is that I feel that responsibility now of like looking back and thinking, right, who do I need to mentor or support? Or I can see something special in them, but they can't quite see it themselves. Because I was guilty of that. Like I didn't have the confidence. If I think back to when I left uni, I remember my mum's, there was an advert, this is how old I am, in the paper for like a graduate, like almost like a telesales BDR type role. And my mum said, oh, you should go for that. And I was like, oh no, I couldn't do sales. And I think, God, if only I'd done that at that age. But I just didn't have the confidence because I hadn't been in that environment. And it goes back to school. It was never on a radar.
My experience is exactly the same as yours. Growing up with two brothers, but I thought when I was a small child, there was nothing that that they could do that I couldn't do. It didn't even occur to me. Yeah. It was when I was at school and around that age where you're picking your options that then you start to have that influence filter down, I think, just coming from the world of work to say this is what girls are supposed to be doing. Yeah. This is where you'll end up anyway. So this is what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So it's and I don't think it's changed that much, I have to say. No. Well, if you look at the numbers, the stats don't lie, do they?
For me, so I completely agree with you. I think I'd come from an environment where I was really only women. I'd been to an all-girls school from the age of 4. You know, I only had like my sisters. So I was very kind of sheltered and in a bubble in some ways, which was great because I feel like I had a proper childhood. Like I wasn't kind of influenced by things. But then I moved at sixth form and there was boys in the class and I was like, what's this?
Here's the distraction.
Yeah, exactly. But I do think that then it was only then where I started thinking, oh, things are a bit different, but not in a I can't do it way. It is nuts.
It is. I think I had quite a different upbringing because I was always building computers and all of that with my brothers. So I don't know, I kind of went into IT and then came out of it because I started a university course in information systems and I was the only girl on the course.
Yeah.
And that caused me to leave.
Oh,
no.
And I did marketing instead.
Wow. This is what we talk about, like women entering a very male-dominated sector. Sometimes you do need that support to build your confidence. It's difficult to do.
Yeah, completely agree. Even now I go to conferences and I think, Christ, I'm so women? Outnumbered. Yeah. And it has its pros and cons. I mean, there's also, you know, you can make more of a mark for yourself by being different. Like if I look around, funny enough, I was thinking about it on the way here. If I look around, you know, whether it's my peers or, you know, within the industry, I think I am literally not like anyone else, which is a good thing and a bad thing. Cause it, you know, in some ways, especially moving into the new role, it can be a bit lonely because suddenly I'm having to take on a lot more responsibility and I'm having to make some quite tough decisions. And, you know, you don't just to have that network. I mean, I'm lucky I do have that network outside. So, but it is.
I think it comes back to this question of why do so many female CEOs leave as well? And there is a phenomenon they talk about. They call it the tall poppy syndrome, where women who are in position, because it is unusual that they stand out more, they're open to more scrutiny.
Yeah.
So they have higher expectations.
I completely agree. I mean, I've felt that recently as well, where I think almost, I was at a party and some of the stuff was, well, who do you know? How did you get that job? And I think, bloody worked hard for it. Just for the record, I quickly turned around and went out the party. And I thought, why am I here? But it's alive and well, that kind of judgment. And again, it's because I don't look like, and I don't, do you know what I mean? I don't fit the mold.
Do you feel the imposter syndrome anymore?
Of course I do. Like, to be authentically you, I think you do. I think everyone does to a certain extent.
If you're taking on a new challenge, you should, right?
100%. I mean, there's been times where I thought, Christ, what am I taking on? But I also, it's weird, I also feel a new sense of confidence with it. I think I actually have worked bloody hard to get here and I have sacrificed a lot and I deserve to be here as much as anyone else.
And what's really interesting is you'd never have this conversation with three men, right?
No.
Saying, how do you feel about being in that position? And do you feel like, you know, you stand out, whatever. No. And so what really, really need to do is normalise it. Normalise women in senior positions in tech.
It's interesting though. I've had a couple of men very recently say to me, do you get imposter syndrome? And I'd be like, of course I do. And they're like, yeah, because I think I do as well. And I'm like, it's good. Like they would never say it like you say in front of.
Yeah.
Like, but I thought that's really interesting because.
And maybe that's something
I like
about
it. I think
having
it's
a female lead that they feel more emboldened to be vulnerable. With
that's
it.
What I want. I just want authenticity. Yeah. None of this kind of dog eat dog.
Bravado.
Yeah, it's just doesn't sit
no
well
room
with me.
For it anymore.
No,
is it?
I just think it's outdated and it goes back to people being the best versions of themselves. To do that, you have to be yourself. And then you get the most out of them and out of myself. Like one thing I've done is take a real look at what are, you know, what do you value? What is important? Because it kind of pulls it, you know, you can ground yourself a lot more.
Looking back then, do you think there were any sort of pivotal moments or any kind of like moments in your career where you think that really made a step change or contributed significantly to moving on to the next chapter or your success or where you
are? Yeah, there's probably a few. Like I say, I've been made redundant 3 times, which I actually think is, like, at the time I was devastated, But now I'm like, thank God for that. Like, it put me on the right path. And I think you have to kind of, like, the first two were when I was literally straight out of uni and I was working for startups. So it was a bit of a shock to the system. And I had one where it was in the early 2000s or whatever. And I found it really hard to get a job. Like, that was quite challenging for me. That was the first time I'd usually kind of walked into interviews and got a job. Yeah. And it took me 9 months to get a job because it was such a tough market. Yeah. And that really did make me go, oh, okay, maybe this, you know, I need to think about this a bit more. But at the time, I was not in a good place personally. Like, you know, I'd lost a lot of myself. Everything in my life changed. And that was very pivotal for me. So again, there was a 2 week period of my life where literally my whole life turned upside down. And one of the elements of that was losing my job. And I think that for me was really pivotal in terms of, right, what do I want? You know, I was the kid at school that for work experience wrote to Richard Branson and got it. So I did my best. Yeah. So I was always kind of, you know, very ambitious as a child.
Hold on.
Yeah,
I know. Get back. You did work experience for Richard Branson?
Yeah, his record company.
Wow.
What?
Yeah. It was great.
I got
like
loads
15,
of
CDs.
Yeah, it was brilliant. On Holland Park Road. So I'd go, I'd stay
at
my cousin's.
Really cool.
Yeah,
really,
because
cool.
At that point I wanted to, you know, everyone like wants to be the singer. I didn't want to be the singer. I wanted to be the manager behind the scenes, yeah, making all the money. So yeah, so I wrote to Richard Branson and yeah, I got work experience there. So I was always very kind of, but I've grown up in an environment where everyone in my family has their own business. Like, it's a very entrepreneurial type environment. In fact, I'm the only one that doesn't actually have, I mean, I technically, like, IFS is my business. But yeah, everyone's got something going on, which means like a Sunday in our house generally is like a board meeting.
Really?
Yeah, it's brilliant. The things like...
Never play Monopoly with this family.
Yeah,
never.
Exactly. So, you know, having a Sunday roast and deciding.
I'm just thinking, how do I instill this into my kids?
No, but it just becomes like, I was working at one of my dad's businesses from the age of 12, earning £2.50 an hour. I thought I was the bee's knees because I got to go to Oxford Street Topshop with my like £20 and I'd get like it was, I loved it.
What I really like about that story though, is you're talking about, you know, the ambition and you're a real go-getter. And so you were thriving off these moments of real success, but the things that gave you like the kick in the pants were what you could almost say failure. We don't like
failure
100%. Because it's, but the moments when you were challenged and then you sort of used that to give a kickstart.
You've hit the nail on the head actually. So where I've grown up in this very, I guess, some would call it privileged environment in terms of, you know, I never wanted for nothing. Like I say that, I've always had to work for it as well. Like straight out of uni, my dad would be like, right, this is how much you owe in rent. I don't have a job, dad. Well, you better find one. So it was always kind of like pushing me to do my best, but you're absolutely right. It was because I'd had it quote unquote easy. I hadn't had the tough times as a child. So when they came, it really kind of forced me to look at myself and kind of go, right, who am I and who do I want to be? And I would say, you know, again, if I look at pivotal moments, even just Darren joining IFS. So he weirdly joined the day that I was given the job as an account exec. So my first move into sales. So we weirdly started technically on the same day doing that. He has made a massive difference in terms of the company. And I think I suddenly saw that actually there was a route for me to progress and actually start achieving what I wanted to be. And I think I hadn't really experienced that before. I've worked in companies where there seemed to be no real career path. Does that make sense in terms of there was no kind of route?
Darren is the CEO at IFS.
He's actually now the chairman. So we've got a new CEO as of the 1st of Jan, Mark Moffat. But yeah, so it kind of goes back to having the right culture in the company. Yeah. I suddenly was like, oh, you know, because he's a big advocate for women and supporting women. And yeah, suddenly I had options. Whereas, can I hand on heart say I'd still be at the company if it was... where it was, I think I probably would have got a bit bored because, you know, every two years or so I've moved roles and I've managed to kind of progress upwards. The company's grown massively. So I've managed to kind of ride on that and create my own essentially brand and kind of, I mean, like I say, there's a lot of work gone into it as well.
And do you think those sort of those experiences with redundancy and not being able to get the job straight away that you thought you were going to get, has it helped you to sort of feel that you can embrace failure more? Because we talk a lot about how fear of failure holds a lot of people back, right? From putting their head up a parapet, fear of falling flat on their face. And sometimes you need to go through it to know that you'll be okay the other side of it and try something new.
I think
it's
important as well. Like, life isn't perfect. Yeah. I think we all take a kicking every now and then. Yeah. And I think it's having that understanding and respect. And it's different things, like whether it's your job or your relationship or like a family issue or an illness. everyone goes through crap at some point.
Yeah.
You know, you can't buy your way out of it. It's how you deal with it, right? It's how you respond. And I always just think if you can, we all need days where we want to wallow. I think that's also important. It's okay to have a cry.
Yeah.
Listen
to yourself.
Yeah.
If you need a cry, have a cry.
But then I'm very much like, no, that's not who I am. I'm not going to sit here and just sit around waiting. I'm going to take charge of the situation. And I think it is hard, but it shapes you. It's character building.
It's how you learn
totally.
It? Yeah. And there's a metaphor in there for organisations, really, isn't it? If they don't try something new, you know, they may have to fail 5 or 6 times to find the one solution that everybody else hasn't got. So,
yeah. And I think the one certainty in life is change. Yeah. Like, if you're not changing, especially as a business, like, I can't take charge of the UK and just expect it to be the same in a few years. In fact, if I did that, we'd be in a whole heap of pain, I'm sure. You have to kind of evolve constantly. It's that, you know, and it's being okay with that. And I think some people struggle with change, but it is the only constant, really.
So speaking of change then, obviously Mark Moffat's now in charge.
He is, yeah.
How has the company adjusted to that change and how are you finding that? And,
yeah.
And what do you expect from Mark for the next however long that he reigns?
Yeah, no, it's great. And Mark's great. Darren and Mark have obviously been working on this for a while. So the transition's been very smooth. And Darren's still very hands-on in the business. He's exec chairman, so he's on the board. You know, he's obviously got personal interests in the business. He wants it to succeed as much as anyone. And I think having Mark coming in the same way that I've done with the UK at a global level, again, we've got that whole energy. And I think it's just where he's made his changes, I've made my changes. It's what the company needed to kind of take us to that next stage of the company, really. Yeah. And I'm really excited. I think Mark's great. He really is great. You know, he comes from more of a consulting background through PwC. And he brings that kind of professional services, a bit like we're talking about the skill shortage. He'll support us in plugging that because he knows it so well.
Yeah.
So, and he's very well connected. And yeah, he's a great guy. So I'm really excited to have him as CEO.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting how things progress.
Yeah.
And what happens in the future there. As a leader then, how do you balance your responsibilities at IFS with your advocacy for diversity and inclusion, particularly in the context of this initiative?
Yeah, I think we've touched on it a little bit. I think I don't see them as different things. I just got to live the values,
embed
right?
It. Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely. And I think I'm in a position now where I'm able to do that. And I think I would be really irresponsible if I didn't acknowledge it and actually tackle it head on.
Yeah.
I just think it's part of my nature anyway. I'm always going to be a girly girl that kind of I want to look after and make sure we're getting the right kind of next generation coming through. You know, I've touched on my nieces. Like, for me, it's really important they understand that they can do this on their own.
Yeah.
I really don't want them to think that they have to
rely on somebody else.
Yeah. Or just like, that's like, I've got to find a rich husband. Like, no, you
bloody don't.
Like, you can do this yourself. And actually, you know, and you marry whoever you want, that's fine. But don't ever devalue yourself in the process.
Yeah.
And for me, it's talking about it. Like I say, at school, it wasn't even like spoken about. I think it's just elevating the conversation. And I've got friends, their kids are now starting to get to that age where it's work experience or it's an internship or it's an apprenticeship or, you know, grad scheme or whatever. And they're coming to me and asking me questions. And I think it's great. I'm like, yeah, come and experience it. Come and work. You don't have to pigeonhole yourself onto anything. And working in tech doesn't mean you have to fix the code.
No,
it can be.
That's the misconception.
You know,
loads of opportunities.
So much opportunity. You know, whether it be that we've touched on finance a lot, but you know, if you're a really experienced financial controller or whatever, you could actually work out and be a really good consultant. Just because you've always done something doesn't mean you always have to do it. Yeah. It's just having options.
It's like our backgrounds, isn't it?
Yeah.
So mine was in media, magazines, and music. In marketing, all the M's. And now, you know, I use all those skills across in the ERP world.
Yeah.
I've worked in technical teams for years, but, you know, never written a line of code. Don't ask me to do that.
There you go. Like, yeah, and it could be anything. I just think that people aren't aware of it because no one talks about it. We certainly didn't when I was younger.
So you talked about a sense of responsibility towards individuals and to sort of young girls and women. And I think, is there a sense as well of responsibility towards organisations? Because if they don't diversify, if they don't have diverse teams that represent the people they're going to sell the products and services to, they're not going to deliver services that they're going to buy. And we talked a little bit about International Women's Day, which is this month. And how the theme for that is inspire inclusion. So is there anything that we think is happening in this particular industry, in tech, but in ERP, that are putting those barriers in place or the constructs that are preventing more diverse teams, not just women, but yeah, generally diverse, more diverse teams? Yeah.
I think as an industry, we're pretty good at trying to address, at least having the conversation in terms of trying to kind of break things down. Like I said before, I see it more outside when I'm talking externally to customers and partners and whoever else, where I see more of the challenges. If I look at what we're doing as an organization, you know, we have a whole kind of community group. So we've got an IFS Women. All sorts
LGBTQ
of
different.
Yeah, there's so all sorts, which I think is really inclusive, and we kind of bring together. And then the thing that I'm trying to do with, certainly with the women's group, is why are we doing this by ourselves? Like, why aren't we inviting customers? Why aren't we inviting partners? Because I think that's where you kind of take it to the next level, yeah. Which is really important to me. I we can all talk about it and sit around a table and try and do what we can do amongst ourselves, but let's take it to the wider group, because you'll find that not everyone knows how to tackle it.
And I think, as you say, not everyone even knows what ERP is.
Yeah.
And that's really lacking, isn't it? That missing that sort of education into whether you're school leaver or somebody thinking about changing career or coming back to work after a career break, that a lot of people don't even know that it's an option.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, like I say, it's getting the conversation started is number one. And yeah, just being inclusive about it.
So I'd really like to get some advice from you for our listeners that are aspiring into those leadership roles in ERP. What would you like to say to them?
What I'd say is you can do it. Like, if I can do it, anyone can do it. You know, think big, dream big. If I think to where I am now, I never thought I didn't dream big enough. And now I'm thinking, what do I do next? Like, the ceiling is there to be smashed. Yeah, why shouldn't we?
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for the past 2 years.
Oh, it's been emotional.
Good luck with everything. And don't be a stranger.
She won't be.
She's going to set me off in a minute. Oh, no. Well, like I say, number one fan. I'm going to get a T-shirt, I think, with her on.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we'll absolutely.
Still
it's been a journey.
A key player in the work community.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Yeah, don't forget me, more importantly.
No, I know.
Don't leave me behind. But no, it's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, thank you both so much.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.